Well, Larry Hannon, people always have a lot to say about these cameras, whether they think they're a good traffic deterrent or not, whether they're really all about revenue or traffic safety or not. Mm-hmm. Now, a new wrinkle, these allegations of bribery to land the government contract in Florida.
Yeah, this has kind of been a snake-bitten project. They've been city officials have been pushing for these red light cameras for, I think, about 7-8 years now. You know, the first time it was passed, they ended up not moving forward because of questions on the legality. The state legislature fixed that. Now we've got these bribery charges. And I should mention, this is not the first time Morton's has popped up. I believe one of my colleagues caught quite a few city council members having a bad dinner that violated the Sunshine Law with a lobbyist a few years ago. So if you're a city official in Jacksonville, good advice is just don't go to Morton's.
We're giving them a lot of publicity, though, just talking about it. Karen Mathis, these cameras are all over town. I think there's 25 intersections now that have them. And the grace period is pretty much over with. You will be fined if you are caught running a red light.
Oh, very true. I personally don't know that I know anybody who's been caught on the red light cameras. I'm not sure people are going to be talking about it. But you're very well aware when you're going through these intersections, basically because nobody's running the red lights. I mean, that's the biggest point. But I wanted to go back to something Larry said, and that was about Morton's. I know that the story said that this dinner happened in August 2006, and I'm wondering if there has been a public records request to look at city council members at the time, where they were on that date. Were they part of it? So that could be in the public record, whether they attended or not.
As of right now, Fred, there's no proof that bribes were placed or there are no serious allegations of wrongdoing on the part of our local officials.
Well, when they used to meet at the old Diamond Head restaurant, which is now River City Brewing, there was never really any proof that the city council members did anything wrong over there. But the mere fact that you were present is going to be something else. If that public records request happens, which it probably will now that you mentioned it, then there will be some scrambling. It's interesting that the sheriff says that he didn't recall meeting with them, which is not a great answer. But although this is almost a little about much to do about nothing, we're going to keep these red light cameras. It's just a question of whether or not this company is going to be the one supplying the hardware.
And if they get rid of this one, it's going to cost a fortune to take those cameras down and put new cameras up. So I think to a certain extent, the city is stuck with them. You know, but when I was transportation reporter, I wrote quite a bit about this. And every time a story ran, I got so many angry phone calls from people who didn't want it. I mean, it is a moneymaker. It's going to make a lot of money for this company. It's going to make a lot of money for this city. But based on anecdotal evidence, people do not like the fact that these cameras are up.
And the data, depending on how you interpret the data, either they really do cut down on the number of crashes, or critics say that the data is inconclusive. The JSO, a big proponent of these, they think it will reduce their workload on working all of these wrecks.
Or the wrecks will be different. I mean, instead of the T-bones, you're going to have the rear-end crashes at the red lights. And I know you've, Melissa, interviewed the sheriff many times, and he's talked about the red light cameras, and he said if you don't like them, just don't run the red lights.
Yeah, the most detailed study I've seen on it said exactly what Karen just said, that it makes the T-bone crashes less likely, but it increases the number of rear-end crashes. Because people remember, there's a red light camera here. They stop at the last minute, and the car behind them hits them. So we get possibly less of one type of crash, but more of the other.
And what are your thoughts about the city's red light cameras? They are up across the city. The company behind them, Red Flex, accused of bribery of public officials in 13 states to land government contracts to put the cameras up. Let us know your thoughts. 549-2937. Let's go to Paul in Orange Park this morning. Hello, Paul. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. It's an excellent subject to bring up. I've driven personally for 46 years, and 13 years of those were as a commercial truck driver. So I have about 3 million miles of driving experience. Unfortunately, we wish our government would be more noble, upright, honest, and that gifts and bribes were not a part of the equation of decision-making, but that's not the case. In fact, in Washington, D.C., I don't think very much of anything gets done without gifts and bribes. So, you know, I mean, it would be nice if we could get rid of that problem, but I don't know how. As to the issue of red lights, scientific evidence has shown that running red lights and speeding are the two major causes of serious accidents involving serious injury. People will adjust their behavior as these red light cameras, proliferate. They will begin to learn how to determine, when a light is going to, get ready to change. In Orange Park, we have these countdown boxes to tell you how many seconds are left before the light's going to change.
Yeah.
And that way you can judge quite easily whether or not you have enough time to get through the intersection.
Yeah.
The detractors to this are saying, well, we'll have more rear-end crashes. Yes, at first we probably will, but then again, people will adjust. They won't follow as close. They won't drive as fast. Everything will be brought into a more orderly state. And I believe that, at heart, everybody would like to see a safer, less nerve-wracking, less stressful experience on the highway.
Sure. Thank you, Paul. And sorry to cut you off. Just want to get a few more callers on the line. That's Paul down in Orange Park. Let's go to Susan in Mandarin this morning. How are things your way, Susan?
Yes, my question is about if they're changing the lane to the yellow light, which sort of dovetails on the previous caller and that he says people have to have a countdown. Well, I just counted the light, the yellow light that I passed, and it gave me 5 seconds. I did get a ticket for one of those cameras in Green Cove Springs, so I did some research on it, and a lot of the companies changed the yellow light from 5 seconds to 3 seconds.
Hmm.
So you really don't have, time to stop. Right after I got that ticket, I was slamming on brakes at yellow lights, which I'm not, that guy's saying you can judge when a light's going to turn red. I'm just not really sure that's true. And I was wondering if you have any information if they've changed the length of the yellow light where there's cameras.
Sure, yeah. Thank you, Susan. Larry Hannon.
I spoke to Green Cove Springs officials back when they put the lights in, and they were adamant that they hadn't changed the timing of the yellow lights, but I got lots of calls from people in Green Cove Springs who insisted, no, it seems like it's, the lights are going quicker now. The red light camera companies also claim if you go through a yellow light, you won't get ticketed. That if it's even close, it won't. But again, that's not what people think. It's not what people say has happened to them. A lot of people have called me saying I went through a yellow light, it wasn't red, and I got a ticket. So I don't know if it's just our perspective changes or if what the red light camera companies say isn't true. I haven't tested it by running through yellow lights myself, but there does seem to be what the companies say they do and what people who get the tickets say they did does not match.
Ken in Jacksonville, go ahead, Ken.
Quick point. As far as the red lights and Green Cove, I can attest to those because I had a ticket for one. As long as the light is green or yellow when your bumper goes through the widest portion of the white line, if you're in the center of the intersection, you're not going to get a ticket. There's two individuals that review every single one of those videos that go through these red lights, and it's their discretion as to whether or not they issue you a ticket. Just because they send you a citation doesn't mean you have to pay it.
Hmm.
Do your homework, be diligent, be vigilant, know the law, and don't get taken. And secondly, I would like to know how many police officers, because I see them every day, how many police officers, city officials, judges, and folks like that have ever been red light ticketed? I would really like to know the statistics on that.
Well, yeah. Thank you for that, Ken. Thank you for that. State Representative Lake Ray this week said he was ticketed, but that it was a case of mistaken identity.
Right. They had switched numbers. His license plate was from somebody in South Florida that was mistaken for his license plate. I think what the caller just mentioned is where the rub is. It should not be a subjective process. It should be an objective process all the way around. I think that's the problem. And I think as this goes on, those folks in the legal community, those who really think enough and have enough money to begin to challenge this legally, will begin to look at this objective process that is there. Either it is or it isn't. Either you've ran the light or you haven't run the light. Who's running the show? Is a computer running the show? Or do we have somebody there, an officer, watching these cameras and making that judgment. And that's where the problem is here. It's not a question of should we have it or not, whether it causes less crashes, but you're costing me up to $250 on somebody else's judgment. And I want to know what it is and who it is. How long is the yellow light supposed to be? Should we have countdown? I think the countdown is great. I thought they were only for people walking across the crosswalk. I didn't know they were for cars. But, I mean, that's what we're dealing with here, and it shouldn't be that way. And for the sheriff to say, well, if you weren't running, look, don't give me that because it's my money that you're taking out of my pocket, and I don't have any way to argue it unless I spend more money.
That's what I think is driving some of the anger about it.
I wonder if there are legal firms that are considering running ads that we can help you fight your red light ticket. I haven't seen any, but, you could see that.
You're giving people ideas right and left,
I'm
Karen
telling
Mathis.
You, I'm handing out assignments today.
Also making headlines this week, Governor Rick Scott making a pitch to increase public school spending by $442 million. Scott calls the plan historic, saying education spending in Florida would reach a record high of $19 billion, but critics say the funds wouldn't be enough to cover new costs for the districts around the state, such as technology upgrades for testing and more. Give us a call as we discuss the governor's education budget and the latest reelection poll showing likely Democratic challenger Charlie Crist up 8 points over Scott. 549-2937. Larry Hannon, the governor, making a series of moves with an eye toward reelection.
Yeah, he's running for reelection actively now, even if he hasn't admitted it. It's interesting that he's doing these school things. Education groups have pointed out when you adjust for inflation, we're still not spending as much on schools as we did before the recession. The 2007, 2006 numbers were higher than what Scott has proposed for next year. And, Crist is pretty highly regarded by education groups right now, largely because he vetoed that teacher tenure bill that Senator John Thrasher pushed back in the day.
Back
when he was governor. That's given him a lot of credibility with teachers. And I, on the election, I think this is going to be fascinating because we have a governor people don't like, but he has an enormous amount of money. And we have a challenger, a former governor, who has among the best retail political skills I've ever seen, but he's going to be ridiculously outspent. And no one really trusts him because he's had so many different positions over the years.
Sure, he's changed parties and positions. Mm-hmm. Here's a comment on our Facebook page. Regarding Scott, it's all quantitative easing, Fed money anyway. He's talking about Florida having more money to spend. This is clearly an election ploy. The money really needs to be pumped into K-8 education, as that is where tomorrow's gaps in education, achievement, and income are being created as I type this. Now, the state's budget, Fred, Karen, is flush for the first time in years. That is a fact. And unemployment has dropped, also easily quantifiable. Two data points that the governor can say point to his successful track record. Of course, Charlie Crist will try to say that the recovering economy shouldn't be credited to Rick Scott.
Well, and you're also going to have a lot of people digging into those unemployment numbers because there's been a lot of trouble nationwide with people saying the way you measure unemployment can sometimes be very difficult to quantify because it's the number of people looking for work and not finding work. And if you drop out of the workforce, you're not counted as unemployed. You may not have a job. You may have given up and you're not counted. So the number of unemployed, the unemployment percentage is down, but the number of unemployed people may very well be up. So those numbers are going to get a good look during this election.
There's also a question of people who are employed but not where they should be. You take a job, fast food job if you have to make money. And, people are saying we're seeing a lot of convenience store jobs opening up, but we're not seeing the type of jobs.
Not good paying jobs opening up.
And that's why the 700,000 jobs that he ran on is not going to be anywhere on the radar for the governor over the next few months because he simply has not been able to keep that promise. It's just interesting that here in just a few months before the election, the governor finally comes around, and of course, he's been working on it for a while, to give teachers this incentive money, and of course, is supporting Florida's version of the Common Core standards by giving them money, and that's of course as we all know, entirely anathema to what's happening in the legislature. They're not inclined to give any more money out. They're not, despite the fact that we have this budget surplus, they're not inclined to do it. If anything, they're still inclined to find ways to cut government more. What they're going to do with all this cash is anybody's guess, but they still want to try to help the governor out because he's a fellow Republican and they want to see him there. But they're not there. But on the other hand, they're just not that enthusiastic about his term as governor. So it's a difficult thing. And when you look at the numbers, I mean, even though just an 8-point lead between Chris and Scott, the number, the lead he has among Hispanics, among independent voters, and among women around the state is just, I mean, it's almost 2-1 in each case.
Yeah.
And that's something that is going to be really difficult for the governor to overcome when he hasn't put forth any policies to make any difference among these groups.
Scott doesn't really have a base when you come down to it. You know, he was a Tea Party candidate in 2010, but the Tea Party hasn't been happy with everything he's done.
But don't you think, though, they'll still come home to him?
I think I think what's going may end up saving Scott is that a lot of core Democratic voters don't vote in years when there's no presidential election. If the people who come to vote in 2014 are the same who came in 2010, I think Scott gets reelected. If the people who voted in 2008 and 2012 come out, I think Chris is going to be the next governor.
And if you're just joining our Friday Media Roundtable, we want your calls right now as we discuss the top stories of the week. Well, more big news this week that could play a part in that November election. The Florida Supreme Court has narrowly approved language for a proposed constitutional amendment that would legalize marijuana for medical use. That's here in Florida. This measure is now guaranteed a spot on the state's November ballot. Let us know your thoughts. Will you vote for or against legalizing marijuana for medical use in Florida? Give us a call, 549-2937. Karen Mathis, the court ruling by a 4-3 margin that the ballot summary was clear. They approved it. Orlando attorney John Morgan spent millions of his own money to get this thing on the ballot. He was successful, a defeat for the Florida Attorney General Pam Bondi. She had argued before the state's high court that this will open the door to rampant drug use in Florida, that it's a slippery slope. She lost that argument.
And she did. And it's always pointed out as well that John Morgan has been the employer of Charlie Crist. So he will, I think John Morgan says that that has nothing to do with me getting these signatures for the ballot. And a lot of people say, yeah, right.
Yeah, Republicans, operatives in the state say, this is nothing but a Trojan horse, this marijuana ballot issue, to get Charlie Crist back into the governor's mansion. They think traditional Democratic voters, younger voters, and even more libertarian-leaning voters who like the idea of legalizing pot, that they'll vote for Crist on this issue, since he's vocally now championing this idea that his employer, John Morgan, is behind.
Well, I mean, that's the way politics goes, isn't it? Correct? I mean, it went to the Supreme Court. We waited the requisite amount of time for them to rule, and they ruled. And now it's on. And it's a question of who can get their people to the vote. And I think what's obvious here is that folks, younger people, independents, could very well turn out at the polls to vote on this particular issue.
Because where they might not otherwise turn out.
Well, they might not otherwise turn out. Yeah. It's going to be a heated battle. Now, how much is the opposition, the anti-marijuana folks, how much stomach do they have to engage in trying to defeat this matter is going to be what's also up there. And is the governor going to really come out four square against it? He's not. So far, I'm opposed to it because on moral grounds, but that's lukewarm.
He's not going to fight it very hard.
The polls I've seen, yep, even Republicans favor this.
Yes, I mean, 82% of the state's voters say do it.
Yeah, I mean, unless they're going to have to run a major ad campaign to beat this, and I don't think they really. I think Scott is against it, but I don't think it's something he feels that strongly about.
It's not
about
an animating issue for him and his people.
No, and Reuters has reported the numbers that Larry was referring to, and that is as many as 70% of registered Republicans in Florida favored medical marijuana in a November Quinnipiac University poll. Support was higher among Democrats at 87% and independents at 88%.
Well, Florida would join 18 other states and D.C. if they allow medical patients to use marijuana. It's often used to ease nausea for chemo patients and things of that nature. We want to know what you think. 949-2937. Let's go to Dave on the south side. Hello, Dave. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. What I don't understand is why we just don't go to the woods to bring Colorado and Washington. Just go and legalize it for recreational use. I mean, after all, the two legal drugs that we have for recreation, ice, tobacco, and alcohol, are considerably more dangerous, cause considerably more loss of life, and are far more of a hazard, and yet people choose whether or not they can use alcohol or tobacco on whether it's purely a matter of any adult having the ability to go to a liquor store or to a business store to purchase alcohol and tobacco. Why can't we allow people to purchase marijuana as well? Clearly nowhere near as harmful as those other drugs.
Dave, kind of a bad connection, but I hope people could hear what Dave had to say. And yes, two states, the two Super Bowl team states, by the way, Colorado and Washington, have fully legalized marijuana. It's sure to come up as a point of discussion, I think, on Sunday.
And if you want the Jaguars to make the playoffs anytime soon, I think we know how we have to vote in this medical marijuana issue.
Well, and there's the whole regulatory aspect of this, if it passes, and how is it prescribed? Because it's not an FDA-approved drug, so it has to be dispensed in a different way.
Yeah.
And there are all kinds of interesting rules that are being discussed that might make it easier than you think.
Yeah.
Let's go to Bob in St. Augustine. Hi, Bob. What do you think?
Well, first of all, I think we're missing the real issue here, and that is the medical, the help that it's given to the people that are trying or undertaking chemo, and also there's been recent revelations about the reversing of some cancers, and putting that aside, if you think back about what Amsterdam did with the bicycles, they eliminated the effect of bicycles by sliding them free in different zones.
Okay, and you know what, Bob? I'm so sorry, but we're just having trouble hearing you. Thanks for the call, though, Bob.
Yeah.
And lots of calls on this.
I think a good point to make is that we're kind of seeing the same thing with marijuana we're seeing with gay marriage, which is the younger generation supports both. And to a certain extent, it seems almost certain we're going to get both legalized, probably marijuana eventually, recreationally for everyone, just because the people who are opposed to it are dying off, and the people who are younger and minorities, Hispanics and African Americans, tend to be more supportive of it, and they're becoming a much larger portion of the electorate.
Sure.
So, you know, it's to a certain extent, this is demographic destiny.
Well, we also need to make note of this rift that is deepening between Mayor Alvin Brown and City Council President Bill Gulliford. The two are at odds over how best to resolve the city's pension crisis. This is Gulliford is mulling a run for mayor himself. Fred Matthews, you've had the chance to speak to both of these men. Your thoughts?
Well, I mean, every mayor, well, I won't say every, but of course, if we look back to the Peyton administration, he's a mayor who had no legislative experience, no elective experience when he took to office. So he had a bit of a bumpy ride the first two or three years that he was in, and then things began to straighten out. But what the difference here that we're seeing between Mayor Brown and Council President Gulliford, and now spilling over into the comments being made by an independent authority, is that the animus tends to just go up to the level of insult. The words like incompetency are being used, floated around city council chambers and elsewhere about this. And, of course, when you look at the mayor's staff, you have to wonder, why would you allow the mayor to make statements, in this case make a presentation to his own task force on pension reform, when they're in the midst of trying to come up with solutions, and basically you make a recommendation that imposes your will upon their recommendation, and then you ask for $40 million from an agency that you hadn't really talked to and hadn't approved, and you've got a major political operative sitting over there as the chairman of the JEA board, Mike Hightower, who's the chief Republican fundraiser. Everybody knows him. And what is he going to do? He's going to do what he did, deny you. So it's a bit of a strange mix here. It is to the level now of a bit embarrassing to have this thing going on. And it doesn't appear that the mayor has any real answers for it. In fact, he still seems to be caught off guard by what's happening.
At the same time, Karen Mathis, the mayor, is saying that this council president is taking shots at him, personal shots, and not coming up with alternatives.
Well, and I think you read probably in the Times Union this morning, first thing, that Council President Gulliford had said that it is not his position to make these recommendations to the mayor's retirement reform task force, that is, you know, it's the mayor's task force, so it is not Bill Gulliford's place to come in front of them and say, here's what I think you ought to do. That would be in the council's hands. But pension reform is probably the biggest issue, the biggest financial issue facing the city. It has to be resolved. Otherwise, it's just going to become worse. It's going to become larger. It's going to become much more difficult to deal with. And I think it needs to be dealt with rather than just become a political ball.
But in the raw political world, I think to a certain extent, Brown welcomes this. I think, you know, anytime a chief executive runs against a legislative body, whether it's president and Congress or mayor and city council, the executive tends to be the one who wins because people know him much better. And let's face it, there's a reason why no one has gone directly from the city council to the mayor's office since the 1970s. It's you're going from a very small part of the city to trying to represent everyone. I think the mayor may welcome a Gulliford run for mayor because I think the mayor thinks he can beat him. And so even though it doesn't necessarily help get the pension reform through, it may help get the reelection done for Mayor Brown.